Hello, and welcome to Security Wire Weekly for Wednesday, June 28, 2006. I'm Bill Brenner. In this week's Security Spotlight, a roundtable discussion on the month's top news stories. But first, our top story. IT professionals have three new Microsoft threats to worry about this week. First, vulnerability researchers are warning of two new flaws in Internet Explorer, which attackers could exploit to bypass security restrictions and launch malicious commands. The French Security Incident Response Team noted in its advisory that proof-of-concept exploits have been published. Meanwhile, Microsoft says those who haven't deployed a patch for flaws in the Remote Access Connection Manager, also known as RASMAN, should do so immediately, as detailed exploit code is circulating that attackers could use to target the flaws. Finally, antivirus giant Symantec has warned of new proof-of-concept code that targets a Microsoft Windows Live Messenger security hole. Windows Live Messenger is the instant messaging client formerly called MSN Messenger. Microsoft says the RASMAN threat targets a pair of critical remote code execution flaws affecting versions of Windows 2000, XP, and Server 2003. The flaws could enable malicious attackers to take control of an affected system. Microsoft issued a patch for this problem in its June 13th security bulletin. Of the Windows Live Messenger threat, Symantec said version 8.0 is affected and is reportedly prone to a heap overflow vulnerability when processing malformed contact lists. And now for this week's Security Spotlight, a roundtable discussion on some of the major security news of the last month. Joining us to talk about it is Natalie Lambert, an analyst with Forrester Research, Jeremy Martin, a Colorado Springs, Colorado-based penetration tester and forensics analyst, and Keith Gosselin, IT officer for Biddeford Savings Bank in Biddeford, Maine. Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Let's start with a recent analyst report that came out in June, suggesting that it's time for enterprise users to demand service-level agreements, also known as SLAs, for signature quality from their antivirus vendors. This report isn't the first to suggest such a thing, of course. Industry experts have been calling for more accountability in the face of some serious side effects users have suffered at the hands of their AV software. The most recent example of this was May 31st, when Symantec pushed an antivirus update that incorrectly identified two Windows management products from ScriptLogic Corp. as adware variants, resulting in mass quarantines or file deletions. Symantec released a corrected signature file the next day, but that didn't erase many companies' need to unquarantine or reinstall deleted files. Jeremy, as a penetration tester, you spend a lot of time trying to help enterprises find their security vulnerabilities. Has this issue been a problem for any of your clients?
The issue has. I do agree with the service level agreements. Fortunately, the specific Symantec issue has not been a problem. However, I have had less similar issues with software vendors. In particular, there is one vulnerability assessment tool that gave false negatives when scanning for a recent Macromedia vulnerability. And that caused quite a few issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, Keith, as an IT administrator, do you think, from your experience, that AV vendors in general are taking enough responsibility for side effects like the Symantec incident I described, or do you think it's reasonable to expect vendors to provide SLAs?
Bill, I'm not sure that the vendors are doing enough to avoid these problems or to rectify them when they do happen. But I do think that, and especially in the case of Symantec, I think the software or the quality of the software is far superior to what it was 5 to 8 years ago. In our industry, SLAs are pretty commonplace. So a lot of times we're forced to get some sort of SLA, especially from some of our smaller vendors. By our regulators. So I think across the board SLAs would be a good thing. The more I think about it, though, I'm a little concerned about how we could possibly enforce SLAs without adding a tremendous amount of paperwork and overhead to the IT staff.
Well, on that note, let me ask this, and this is to anyone who wants to answer. If SLAs may not be the perfect answer, what are some of the other things vendors or companies can do to ensure better accountability?
This is Keith, but I'm not sure exactly what we could do to force vendors to a higher accountability. I really don't know.
Well, time will tell. Another big story of the past month was that Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates announced plans to draw down his daily influence at the company he co-founded more than a quarter century ago. This begs the question of what's in store for the Trustworthy Computing initiative he launched a few years back. Natalie, you recently wrote a report with Forrester on Microsoft's thrust into the security market. Do you think the company's security strategy will change at all as Gates steps back from his day-to-day involvement?
No, I don't. I believe that Microsoft has put a lot of money and energy into entering the security market. It is what their customers have been asking them for. And at this point, they really do have a set strategy. They have products that have already come out. They've got products coming out next year, and they're already talking about all of their roadmap items. I do not believe that Microsoft or Bill Gates's slow departure will really change any of those security initiatives. This is a market they want to enter, and they've put a lot of energy here, and they want to be one of the top players.
Well, let me ask you, Jeremy, and anyone else who wants to chime in on this after can do so, certainly. Do you buy into the notion that a senior executive can have a major influence on a vendor's security offerings, or is it really the case that the real changes come more often from the lower-level people working with customers?
There's always the issue to where the senior-level execs do have a major influence on the vendor security offerings. Business does follow money, and senior execs usually have most influence because they have the most purchasing power. However, the voice of the customer is pretty strong also. If Microsoft stays with the current flow, Microsoft should not be hurt by the security structure that they're going through.
Keith, let me ask you, as somebody with Windows machines in the environment, has Microsoft's efforts in the past few years improved security at your company, and are you having any concerns about a future Microsoft without Gates?
I certainly think that all the things that Microsoft has done over the last couple of years, especially the Windows 2003 environment, has significantly increased security here at our bank. Gates leaving, I'm not really sure, is going to hurt their security offerings too much or railroad anything that may be happening there. I do have a little bit of concern with his leaving that it's going to slow down the innovation and new products coming out in the future, just because I think he was a driving force behind a lot of that.
Natalie is...
I mean, I do believe that they have a very solid roadmap ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Basically, they recognize that they are entering this market behind, and that the only way to really be able to compete with the likes of McAfee and Symantec are to be able to offer a competitive solution, which at this point they don't have. So I think that regardless, in order for them to be able to gain market share, they're going to have to come out with a more solid product, which means that I don't think they can slow down the security roadmap for these products. If anything, they're really going to have to increase it, for that matter.
Let me move on to another story that was big in June and also the month before, and this is the latest wave of data breaches that started with the VA in May and has continued unabated through June. Some of the latest enterprises to be affected are Visa USA and Equifax. Meanwhile, the steady stream of data breaches that started with ChoicePoint back in February 2005 has left more than 88 million Americans at risk for identity fraud, according to a list that's been tallied by the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse. What's interesting about the latest wave of breaches is that they're not about hackers cracking company networks to steal sensitive data. Most of these cases have involved laptops and other computer hardware that were either stolen or misplaced. Keith, is this a failure on the part of enterprises to enforce common sense security policies, particularly when it comes to the handling of company laptops, or is this simply a case of bad luck and employees ignoring the rules?
Well, Bill, I think it's a combination of the two. Clearly on the VA's part, they were more to blame than what they were willing to admit, and I guess I could understand that to a sense. I think in the end, training on your security policies and training your staff to get them to realize what ultimately is right and wrong about what they can do, especially with company laptops, is probably the top way of trying to avoid some of these issues that have come out. And they keep being, they're always laptops, it seems like, every time you pick up another article and read. So certainly training would probably help to avoid most of these issues.
Have you ever dealt with any problems with rogue laptops, or have you been lucky thus far?
I mean, thankfully, we've been very lucky. We've only got, a handful of laptops that actually travel outside the bank, and for the most part, they do not contain customer information.
Jeremy, I would imagine that you've probably dealt with some clients that where you found that there would be room for improvement in securing hardware like this. What are some of the best practices that you try to drill into their psyche to better protect their sensitive data?
Honestly, I'd have to agree with Keith there. I would have to say the user education is the most important thing to push. Most security incidents are caused by internal sources, a large percentage being user error or just them not knowing what the policies are. And with proper security awareness programs, company can cut down on most issues and increase the security posture and increase the security of the sensitive data exponentially.
This is a next question that anybody can jump in and answer. Is it time for companies to rethink who gets to use mobile devices, really taking something like a laptop and making it a special privilege to be able to hang on to?
I would definitely think that it's probably time that most companies start to seriously look at that, especially companies like ChoicePoint and some of these other ones that have had these major breaches.
I think something else to add to this is that I just worked on a report about building a framework for protecting these devices. And for the background research of this report, we talked to about 50 IT security directors about their fears with regards to mobile and portable devices. And a lot of them told us that, 100% it's around the data that's on them. And so a lot of them have actually decided to take such drastic measures as to not allow data in general on these devices. You always have to, VPN to a file store type thing. And so they're recognizing that, at the risk of business innovation and competitive, just in getting work done, that, they are choosing to lock down their data so that these mishaps don't happen. And, they're looking for solutions and a way to think about security to prevent this in the future. So as you said, I think it's also more beyond preventing who uses laptops, or really looking at how to secure them, and not all users should be treated the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me move on to the final item. A special report is debuting this week on searchsecurity.com that details the challenges security professionals have when it comes to ID and access management. The report, which runs Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, is based on a survey of 358 IT professionals searchsecurity.com conducted in April. Keith, you're one of the people that we interviewed for the report, and can you talk briefly about some of your biggest ID and access management challenges and the kind of effect that they've had on your organization's security program?
I think generally change has just been the biggest issue that we've had, is people have a hard time understanding the the higher levels of security that we have to have now, and why it is that a password, a username and a password, just simply isn't enough anymore. Similar to what I said in the article, and that's really been our more or less our biggest challenge.
Now, have regulations, we hear a lot about companies that are doing a lot to enhance security that maybe they wouldn't otherwise be doing if not for these mandates. Would you consider that in the long run, some of the regulations out there have been a blessing in disguise because it has really put security on the table?
Yes. I think some of them have been very good, and they've gotten upper management, at least for us, to have to give security more of a thought than what they would have done had these not been at the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Natalie Lambert, Jeremy Martin, and Keith Gosselin, thanks again for joining us on Security Wire Weekly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
And that's Security Wire Weekly from SearchSecurity.com. The latest security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at SearchSecurity.com/news. where you can see our special report running all week on ID and access management. And don't forget that you can download more of our podcasts, including our new Threat Monitor podcast, at searchsecurity.com/podcast. I'm Bill Brenner. Thank you for listening.